Well, hello everybody and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show. Another edition of a story of women rising from tragedy to triumph. If you're a fan, if you listen to the show regularly, you'll know that the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show is specifically for women. I attract women entrepreneurs who are seeking to flourish and women professionals who are leaders already or want to become leaders. And this is a show where I'm bringing to light some of the grit needed to pursue big things in life. And I'm delighted today to be joined by one of my professional colleagues, Dr. Venka Medling. And am I pronouncing your name right, Venka?
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much, Yvonne. Yeah, you pronounce it perfectly.
Excellent. Okay. So I had an opportunity to meet with Venkat just recently in a networking group. And it's been really interesting because as we build out our business, we know that the concept of networking, building new colleagues, making new connections is really important. And I think that in the entrepreneurial space in particular, it's really important because we get to see not only other coaches, but we get to see other service providers who have a unique skill set. And today we're going to dive into the topic of equine coaching. Really an interesting topic. Myself, a few years back, I had an opportunity to go out to one of the local equine groups here and do some work with horses, and it was fascinating. And I'm so glad that Venkat has been able to join me today to talk about how can leadership really advance using horses. So, Venkat, first, 5 years. I know that we're going to dive into your story in a little bit. But she is a professor from originally from Europe.
Frankfurt.
There we go. Who has been in the United States, excuse me, living in Washington, D.C. area for the last 8 years. And she had brought this heritage with her of becoming a professor in contemporary history. And she, like myself, had a little bit of a wake-up call. We'll get into this story of rising from tragedy to triumph, which is part of the essence of this show. Because I believe that when women are going through something, if we understand and appreciate that not only have others gone before us, but we've come out the other side of the tunnel and are now thriving. And so it's a great reminder that no matter where your journey takes you right now, where no matter where your journey has led you from, there is always hope, there is always opportunity, and there is always a way to turn things around with passion, with energy, and with focus. And I think you'll find today this interview that Venkat has all of those things, and she's bringing her greatest gift, which is partly positive energy and partly, I think, the deep wisdom that she brings from her studies and from working in academia and now working in the corporate arena as well, and out on the farm or out on the horse pastures as well. So she hangs out quite a lot with someone called Gus. I'm going to let her introduce you to him. He is a very important part of the work that she does in the Maryland area, Maryland, DC area. And then also is looking at how she can bring to life her certified executive leadership coaching background from Georgetown to life in the equine leadership piece. So it's going to be a very interesting discussion today. So for the listeners, stay tuned to the very end because there's going to be something special. I have a gift for you, and so does Venkat, and they're two completely different gifts. So today we're talking about this topic of moving from cancer to connection. Yes, we said the C word twice, from cancer to connection, and how horses helped Venka live life to the fullest and step into the life that she loves. So, hello, welcome, Venka.
Thank you so much for the warm intro. Yvonne, it's an honor to be here with you and yeah, to air on your show. True, I made the transition from tragedy to triumph, and I could never have imagined that path. Although at hindsight, friends keep telling me, "Yeah, you were made for that. It all makes sense." And I think that is part of the story, right? When we are in the turbulence of life and really tough stuff is coming our way, we think we are at a low point and we have no idea how to figure this out and how to have a career path that makes sense. And then when you get to the other side and you pull yourself up and you do have friends, family, and colleagues who go with you through these difficult times, then yes, it does make sense because you get out of it stronger, wiser, and you find out, oh gosh, you've got so much to give to the world. And yeah, I
Absolutely.
think I feel like I've come full circle. And yet, right? How can I start as a historian in Germany, then ending up on the East Coast in the US, becoming a leadership coach, working with horses? What's that got to do with history? And I find, yeah, we can connect the dots, and there is value to all of that.
And just to sort of, have a little bit more of a bio, because I'm sure that you're already intrigued. So, certified in executive leadership coaching by Georgetown University, and that's the Institute for Transformational Leadership. This is the background that Venkat is bringing. And in equine facilitated learning by the Herd Institute. And so this is all about equine relational development. Who this is an institute. If you haven't heard of them, there's an element to this work that is so important and yet so deep. We need to really have an expert like Venka diving into it. So, 18 years of experience in academic research, then teaching and leading with leadership on both sides of the Atlantic. So she's got this interesting perspective that she brings to coaching, because if you think about, an assistant professor in contemporary history at it's actually Universität Marburg, she had the opportunity to fellow with the Humboldt Foundation, and also was a postdoc fellow at Johns Hopkins University in the UK, where I'm originally from. Postdoc studies at Johns Hopkins School of International Studies there, and the Hopkins School of International Studies in Washington. So PhD, Master of Arts in History. She's an award-winning author as well in military and war history, with her study on German and French regimes in World War I. So a really diverse and interesting background to bring to this topic of leadership. So before we get to that point, which is sort of the ending of the journey, let's go back a little bit and tell me a little bit about what is it that you feel formed your tenacity, even, was there something back as you were growing up as a kid that led to really seeing your resilience in a new light, and what that has helped you bring forward into your professional career?
I think you have to be tenacious to be an academic in the first place, especially in history. I mean, you certainly don't choose that career path to make a lot of money or to be certain that you'll be employed for life. You just can't count on it. You have to be very idealistic, very passionate about what you do, and then just trust that it will turn out all right. And I felt like that just as my friends did. I was fortunate. I had a lot of friends in history, and we formed very close bonds and supported each other. Most of them women, but also a couple of men I was very close with. And that certainly kept us going because there are crises when you are an intellectual, try to publish, do teaching. You have very little time actually for your research because there's also administrative work to do and whatnot. And just to give you a sense of the numbers, if you apply for a professorship in history in Germany, there's about 150 applications. And these are highly qualified people. So no matter how good you are, how hard you work, how great your CV might look like, you can never be sure that in the end it'll work out.
So that tenacity, was there any experiences in particular that you recall from your earlier years that has also been a building block to having the strength and tenacity to push through for your doctoral role?
I think so. And I'd say it was my passion. I was really enthusiastic about history as a discipline. I found and still find it matters. It matters in political discourse, in educating citizens. And we have an important role to play as historians. And I did contemporary history, so that was closer to what's going on today, and I felt fortunate that through my work, I was able to teach students how actually to read newspapers. I mean, once you think in historical terms, there's no text whatsoever where you don't apply that mindset and that intellect of a historian, and you start analyzing, oh, where do these ideas come from? What interests are behind it? What's the audience? So we do all the critical source work on whatever texts we encounter, and we read the world with a historical mindset. So we don't take anything for given because we know about all the accidents that happened in history, and people didn't plan for how it all turned out. There were just coincidences, weird developments nobody could have foreseen. We just know as historians, oh, it could all have turned out differently. So we just don't take the present moment as a given reality. We think, no, we can change it. It can all turn out differently. There are so many options out there, so many factors to think about. So it's a pretty complex worldview, and it might be intimidating for students when they first enter the discipline of history. But after a couple years of studies, you learn how to deal with it, how to apply it, and how to think reality differently, and that is very helpful because you are never just a blind believer of what's out there, what the actual current discourse might be telling you. You know so much more, and that gave me a lot of freedom of thought and autonomy. But on the other hand, it's also very frightening. Just today, I spoke to a very close history friend of mine. And we both agree that certain political currents are strangely familiar. And we both worked on the rise of fascism and the ideas behind it. And we can see where certain political concepts, narratives, and so come from. And that is frightening. Yeah.
Well, the excuse me, the historical events that have shaped our world, so important. And I think, every time Remembrance Day comes around in particular, it's always so heartwarming to remember those who went before, who fought for our own freedoms and to really look with respectful eyes at all of the history that happened and how it shaped our current opinions, our current way of life. Living in Canada, you're down in the US, living in Canada, we have a much bigger focus these days, particularly in June and then again in the fall, on the heritage of Indigenous peoples and what happened with the divide between trust and what we're now moving into that is leading to truth and reconciliation of some of the horrific things that happened and how the colonialism impacted the Indigenous culture and still has impacts today, and what they're actually now coming forward with to go through the courts to take back some of their own power. And so it's not only in the European countries, but sometimes even within our own country. And I'm calling Canada my own country as a became a citizen after living here for about 10 years. So been a citizen for a while now. Not that any of that heritage was in the documentation or in the preparation for becoming a citizen. It's almost like it was like underground information that was not coming to light then, but it certainly has been coming to light in the last few years. So this topic of leadership, you've obviously led as a professor and led others to be looking through a new lens to make history interesting. I know that history was not my favorite topic until I started to travel, until I started to go to Europe. And I went to France and Switzerland. I went to Germany. I went to Holland. And then I went overseas and did some Caribbean countries. But certainly the history of European times and the small little villages and the cobbled streets and the ways of life, I found it fascinating. But it wasn't until I was actually there to experience it. And I suspect that this whole topic of equine coaching is also very much misunderstood until you've actually done it. So here you are as a professor taking your studies, and then how did you connect that with equine coaching? What's the story there?
That's a great question. I think the linkage there is my passion for connection. So I was always keen on having deep conversations with my students, with colleagues. I took on the position of women's representative at the history department I was working at, and that was just on top of everything else I was doing, but I did it because it was so important to me, and it was a way of giving back to the community, and in that case then supporting other women. And that actually led me to the idea of becoming a leadership coach. When I was reflecting back on what I liked most when I was an assistant professor, wasn't the topic of history, though I definitely was passionate about it. No, it was the human beings I was forming connections with and talking to and trying to support. And it was really a big aha moment when the idea of becoming a coach first entered my mind. That was the huge bridge I saw between my former career and then the new career path I was forging. And horses play a big part in it. I came to horses before I actually did the coaching training. So first horses and connection, and I felt, oh gosh, they have so much to teach me, and I just love being around them. And then the idea came up, okay, I become a leadership coach, and then I can combine horses with coaching, because everything that is good about horsemanship is actually good leadership. And vice versa. So, whatever you learn around horses and you take in their wisdom and you become a better horse person helps you at becoming a better leader. So all the recipes I find in my work with horses apply so beautifully to good leadership and vice versa. So there's also perhaps, the horse world can learn from good leadership because they are so connected, so similar. Probably not identical. I have to figure that out, what the differences are, but I see far more parallels and commonalities than I see differences.
So, what would you say are the top 3 to 5 things, the most unexpected things that you have learned about leadership from horses, and how did that learning come through?
Horses live in the here and now 100%. They never think about the past and certainly never think about the future. They don't have that concept of past or future. They are just in the here and now, 100% present. And I found that is foundational for good leadership. You have to be present. If you're not present, people will feel it. People can tell you're not 100% with them. And life is taking place just in the here and now. And for me, that was such a big insight because I'm a historian. So most of the time, I was dealing with the past and literally occupied by the past. And when I was not occupied by the past, I was probably worrying about the future, which is not healthy at all. And horses are so good at bringing you into the present moment and appreciating the here and now. You just deal with what's happening right now and nothing else.
I remember one of my biggest takeaways from the afternoon that I was spending around some very gracious and important horses was to do with trust. The horses feeling your energy,
Yes.
and they won't come to you, they won't even come near you unless they feel that they can trust you and that you are in your authentic energy. Can you share a little more about that concept? Because I know that you have deep training in this. You've partnered up with a friend, and are now offering group retreats at her farm in Maryland, designed to foster personal growth and connection. So this is something that if you hear it and you're like, whoa, this is really intriguing, you can certainly reach out. I'm sure Venka would be happy to share more about some of the takeaways of a session like that. But that was something that I did not expect. I didn't go into it with that as an objective, and yet it was so important and moving for me. Can you speak to that topic of trust with horses?
Oh, yes, I'm happy to. It's central to horses. If horses don't trust you, they can't connect with you, and you can't connect with them. So it's reciprocal. Trust is part of a horse's basic need, it's part of their yearning for connection. They literally die if they don't have strong social connections, social bonds, primarily with other horses, but also with people. They can extend the same strong bond to a human being they can to other horses. And that is very touching when you see a horse coming close to you and trying to connect with you. And just as you said, Yvonne, it's all about your authentic self. A horse doesn't mind if you are maybe a little anxious or you just don't know what to do with that big animal. That's fine for a horse. What they don't tolerate and they don't like is if you try to play a role, if you try to pretend to be somebody else, like being confident, putting on a mask. Oh, yeah, I know it all. Horses don't like that at all. And they will they will reflect that back to you by, let's say, taking a step back, getting tense and nervous themselves because they can't figure out, well, why is that sentient being so weird? Why are they making these gestures that are full of muscle tone? But I get their energetic field, for example, their heart rate, and horses get all of that. They even get our brains and our gut feelings. They can feel all these different circles of energy. And if they are not in alignment, the horse has a lot of questions on his mind and will act accordingly. Whereas when you just rely on being yourself, whatever it is, just trust this is me, this is 100% me, and this is all there is. Oh, the horse is super fine with that and will connect with you. And that is lovely. It's a gift to us humans that there's another sentient being who actually invites us to become our true selves.
Beautiful. So these retreats that are designed to foster personal growth and connection, can you share a little bit about, some of the takeaways, particularly the things that people were surprised by that they hadn't thought about would be benefits of attending one of those?
Oh, yes, I'm very happy to. When teams and groups come out to the farm and first watch the horses, we always do some herd observation out in the field and then get to work with the horses. Very often, a certain pattern emerges. When they think of collaborating with a horse or doing something, it's very much like a team work mindset. Oh, we have a goal. Okay, we have to reach that goal. So they are purpose driven and goal driven and whatnot. And when they spend some time with the horse, they find out, oh no, it's not so much about the goal or the doing, it's about the being. And the horse teaches them how to just be, accept what is, go with the flow, and all of a sudden it's like magic unfolding, and I've seen that so many times. They find out, oh gosh, we should listen to the calmest group member or team member more often, and that is usually the equine team member, and we should go with what they wish for, and we are so much more powerful with that. And then you see their breath slowing down, tension going from every participant's bodies. It's beautiful to watch. And then they get the idea, oh, we don't have to do anything. I mean, nobody is putting any pressure onto us. It's just ourselves, our patterns that show up here. We think once we come together as a team, we have to do something. No, we just be, and then things will unfold, and we'll get more done in the end than we had ever wished for. In the beginning, for example, they might have tried to pull on the horse's lead rope or push him or whatever. I mean, in a gentle way, we make sure that no horse is abused, and there's no way you can push a horse that doesn't want to go. Whereas if you get a good connection with the horse and then walk forward, the horse will even trot with you. If you run, the horse will run with you. And that is wonderful for people to experience.
Beautiful. So you're right, because a lot of times organizations will book a team building session, and the activities are all about, maybe building something from a paper model or instructions, or coming together. Some of the best ones I've attended have been where, you do have to build trust and connection with your team. Crazy things like falling backwards into their arms, or being in a ropes course, and certain things
Yeah.
happen where you've got to rely on the other team members to be able to get to the other end. But this piece about being, where we teach, or we're taught as we take executive coaching, the whole concept of a be, do, have, right? And when we reverse that around and look at, what what is it that we want to have? And therefore, there are activities that we need to do. But it all stems back to who are we, right? Who are we? That
Right.
being us. It's such an important piece. And I'm so glad that there is more expansiveness now, more acceptance of bringing horses into this. And it doesn't hurt to get away out of the city, you know, be on beautiful acreage somewhere surrounded by
Yeah.
nature. I mean, that's not too tough to take either, right? So
Yeah.
what a beautiful way for horses to teach, you know, some of the really core concepts of leadership and do it in such a beautiful way. So thank you for hosting those events. I'm also curious about this, you know, we shared the title, you know, From Cancer to Connection and how horses helped you step into living the life you love. Are you open to sharing a little more about your journey and what your biggest learnings were having come through that?
Yes, absolutely. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2018, and it came as a shock. I had always conceived of myself as being very healthy, and I wasn't concerned about my health. But of course, cancer is nothing you can control, it just happens, and then you have to live with the diagnosis. I had to undergo everything, so chemo, several surgeries, radiation, and I got fully cured. So I'm a very happy, thank you, grateful cancer survivor. After I had fully recovered, I found out, oh gosh, I just don't want to go back to my desk and write my second book. And then I found out, oh, I don't even want to become a professor. Even if anybody offered me a wonderful chair at any great British, US, or German university, I wouldn't want it. I was now a happier person than I had ever been during my former career. And so, if I wanted to be fully honest, that meant, okay, there's no way back for me. It just doesn't make sense. If I stay true to my new self, I have to find something that fulfills me. And that was when horses came into the game. I remember talking to a close friend of mine on the phone, and I told her, yeah, maybe I could get a couple of riding lessons in Washington. And then I said, oh, though they are really expensive. And she started making fun of me and in a very lovingly way, and said, you know what, Menke, I think you can well afford a couple of riding lessons. And of course she was right. So I took those riding lessons, and then I found out, oh, it's not just about riding. It's really about being with horses and making them a part of my life. And that is how I found out that I had to reconnect with my own childhood when I was dreaming of horses all day long, reading horse stories, watching horse movies. And unfortunately, for over 3 decades, I hadn't taken those dreams seriously. I had literally persuaded myself that these were just some romantic girl's childish dreams or something, and that the horse world was not for me. It was ex again, I told myself it was expensive. Either you start with 6 years old, or you'll never become a horse person, let alone a horse expert. And all these self-limiting beliefs. And yeah, here I am. I met the right people. My good friend Rosanna, whom I'm working with the horse retreats now, told me about the HERT Institute, where I got certified in equine facilitated learning. And Rosanna has got that beautiful horse farm where we can offer these horse retreats to groups and teams. And I think my journey with horses has just begun. I'll not let them go out of my life again. I'll stick with them. And I just defined for myself that, okay, I need at least 3 days a week that I spend with horses, no matter what. So I have to build a career that tolerates that time with horses. And if I can combine horses with coaching, as I do now, even better. Yeah, so I consider myself very fortunate.
Love it. Very often when excuse me, when I'm working with, mostly my work is with women entrepreneurs who are seeking to flourish. When I'm working with women professionals, though, every now and then, or even some men I've been referred as well, the concept of, I have this day job, it doesn't really fulfill me and fill me up. I'm not super excited about it, just like the portion of life that you went through. It's like, I need something different. Not necessarily sure what it is that they need yet, but by looking at the skills, their interests, their passions, the things that they are really good at naturally, we start to sort of get this center point that is their unique, DNA in essence, the DNA of their career. And we start to be able to look at, okay, so if these are the things that I love doing, I'm good at them naturally, people comment on it all the time, how can I have a livelihood that is also connected through with that? Because I love coaching, and so for me, like, this is fun. Not only do I get paid well, but this is fun, and I'm passionate about helping people make that leap from very often it's frustrated to fulfilled, or maybe they're stuck at the solopreneur level and they can't see how they could have a holiday and have their own business and have a team. So, that step from being a solopreneur to moving up to a CEO and starting to do the work through others, step into leadership. New leaders need to learn new skills. They need to learn the art of delegation, the power behind coaching, how to give performance reviews, how to give constructive feedback, and how to not become a bottleneck, right? All of these things are skills that the new leader needs to learn. And obviously, having the right team on board helps. So I did develop a process along the way in my HR career. Interviewing and hiring about 6,000 people, which is a like a 12-step power hire process to help with that. But the career visioning roadmap that I developed really is about what can I do that's different that will still provide the income level that I'm looking for and to be able to support my family and yet be more passionate and be more aligned. Working with the things I love, the people I love, the outcomes I love. I had a similar experience as interesting because we didn't talk about this ahead of time. But when I was growing up, my dad was working for a company that had a country club, and it was I was from in England what they call them, middle class family. And so we weren't society. We weren't the Duke and Duchess. We weren't nobility in English terms. And I remember there was a horse stables next to the country club, and I used to wander off down the road, and I'd be standing, looking longingly over the fence at the horses, watching all the other little rich kids. As you said, it's all right. It's a rich sport. Getting their riding lessons and only dreaming that my parents could A, afford it or choose to support me in that. And I actually waited, like you said, 3 decades. I was 33 and I was thinking about getting pregnant. And I thought, if I don't do my riding now, what am I going to do it? And so I had one of those at 30, moments. You may have had the same one too. It's like, is this all there is to life? What have I not done yet that I craved and had a passion for? And started taking riding lessons. And the place that I went was really, I thought, an excellent choice because we had to go out into the field and catch the horse first. You didn't just show up and here you had your riding lesson. The horse has already got its saddle on. Its feet are clean and everything. You had to go get your horse and attract him in to begin with, then do all the brush down and clean up, then do the clean the hooves, and finally you got to ride. So you better be there at least an hour before your lesson, otherwise you wouldn't have an opportunity to really experience the whole piece about caring for and having a writing lesson. It's all part of the experience. And
Really sounds like a great place. Yeah,
yeah, I did.
I had a similar experience. A writing school I went to in Virginia did the same thing. As a writing student, you were supposed to go out to the field, get your horse, take your time, groom him, tack him, and so on. And then you earned, in a way, you earned your time in the saddle. And I found out I even probably love the caring part more than the writing part, and that is because I felt less insufficient and unworthy. Because as a riding beginner, you are bumping on a horse's back, and it is not fun for them, and you know that when you first learn how to ride. Whereas from the ground, okay, you might do some awkward movements or whatever, and the horse might be wondering, oh, she doesn't know how to put a bridle on. But that's not that bad for a horse. As long as you are kind, and that's the most important thing for them, they, as we said, right, they want to trust you, and they can tell immediately if a person means well or if a person is a threat. And I found out, oh gosh, these horses really enjoy being with me, because I would come earlier and earlier and then lead them to a nice pasture when they could graze and so on. And I extended my time with the horses all the time. And that was, yeah, just more important than the time in the saddle.
Yeah. So note to the listeners, if there is something that is still one of those unfinished business things that you had a craving for childhood, teens, earlier in your life, don't sit on it. Like, experience it. Make a choice that you want to experience it. For me, it was a beautiful 3 years of being out regularly riding. And then when I got pregnant with my son, I decided I wasn't going to be bouncing around on a horse,
Yeah.
even in the early stages of pregnancy. So, that piece though would have been an unfinished business, and it would have kept calling to me if I hadn't done it. Like you, I also had a cancer diagnosis last year. Not breast cancer, kidney cancer, and I didn't even know it was there. I think I shared this a couple of shows ago. Because I actually bumped into another girl who had an accidental finding of a lump after getting a gallbladder attack. I was like, you can't make this up. Like, how did we get connected? We had such a similar experience. But when you have a life-threatening surgery, it has to put things in perspective, the universal 2x4, and it's like, okay, now I finally had, I gave myself 2 weeks to recover. They said 2 to 6 weeks. I'm positive, focused person. So I said, okay, I'll take two. But during that 2 week time frame, made some very important decisions in my life, and chose that come the new year, I was actually going to part ways with my husband. And we were going to, it was clear that we had different values and we were going in different directions. But I wouldn't have seen that if I had just kept doing the same thing, and I would have got the same result as we talk about in coaching, right? You want something different, you've got to do something different to get it. Otherwise, there is no change, there will be no change. So, taking my own time, my 2 weeks, to really reflect on, what is the most important thing in my life? If I don't have that long, say this is a cancer diagnosis that isn't just contained within the surgery, and it does come back, how can I live a more fulfilled, rich life as I go into 2024? So this whole year for me, we're now in December, this has been my year of recalibration. So for anyone who's out there listening, there is an amazing amount of options. There are some amazing treatments. Surgery obviously is one option. And for me, it was the option because my lump was getting close to the wall of the kidney. It was easier to just put a bag in, put the kidney in the bag, take the whole thing out, and hopefully that would not infect anything else. And I'm pleased to say, yes, I've also had a 6 and a 12 month scan and be cancer-free. I think that part of this reason for having this was the wake-up call needed to say, you know, when you keep giving and giving and giving of your source energy, not giving from your overflow, you'll eventually get sick. And I was, with what was happening in the relationship, I was overgiving, and I believe I made myself sick. That's why I believe that showed up. So we have some lessons in life, don't we, to share with you all?
Have lessons, right? And I wonder, what can we do as leader coaches to make the case that people don't have to wait for a horrible cancer diagnosis to change their lives if they want to? How can we get a sense of urgency when there's not yet a cancer diagnosis or a loved one has not died yet, and what other terrible catastrophes might be out there?
Right.
Yeah,
So
I mean.
I don't know about you, but when I took my coach training, one of the funniest things, but it really hit home for me, that they shared with us was a Bob Newhart skit. And it's called, you can look it up on YouTube, it's called Stop It. And it was a hilarious little skit of a psychologist who had someone come to him and what he shared with her. And I think that, you know, when we get these big events happening that are unexpected out of the blue, whether it's a death in the family, an illness, a job loss, you know, all of these major things happen. You're right. Why does it take so much? Well, I believe, if I look back at my certified executive coach training, same as, you know, didn't different university that I took mine at, Royal Roads, but you know, the limbic brain is there, and people don't like change. That little amygdala, that little almond-shaped piece of our brain, calls us back to safety all the time, and that is, oh, there we go. That is part of our physiological makeup. And so change is hard. Change is hard. However, once we make the commitment to say, no, I am not tolerating this anymore, and I'm going to ask you to write that word down, listeners, tolerate. And the question underneath it is, what am I currently tolerating? Because if you don't speak up, if you don't grab life by the horns, no one's going to do it for you. Right? This is a personal journey, and you have to choose what are you willing to tolerate? What are you tolerating right now? And what is it costing you? You know, is it costing you your health like it did for myself with Vengo? I mean, she wouldn't have had the opportunity to, it probably wouldn't have been on the radar to do the beautiful work, the equine work that she's doing now, and to really step into bringing together her passion for history, leadership, movement, change, equine experiences, and bringing this all together into a very unique skill set. And are you hosting events January, February? Like, when is your next equine event?
Oh, we'll definitely post it, but we haven't scheduled it yet. But we can offer horse retreats all year long. We are fortunate in that the weather usually in Maryland allows for that. I wouldn't want to do that in Germany where it's raining all the time.
Or
But
Calgary, where it
yeah.
gets minus 33 and 6 feet of snow.
Yeah. No, we'll definitely have horse retreats coming up early in the new year, and
Excellent.
I will post the dates.
Excellent. So for those who are listening, again, you might not have had a wake-up call recently, but trust me, if you keep sitting on something that is nagging at you, or you've got this gnawing feeling in your belly that you really do deserve to have much more happening in your life, more joy, more alignment, happiness at work, more career fulfillment, more family fulfillment, what is it that you have experienced maybe that could be like a triggering event to get you moving? If there's nothing, use the new year. We're in December. We're going to go through the seasonal festivities, but we have the brand new year coming up. And I love using New Year energy. We've just had New Moon as well, but New Year energy is so powerful. I'm going to call you forward, hold you to account to start thinking about and write down this question. What am I willing to experience and step into fully in 2024? What's one thing that would exceed my happiness factor that would bring me great joy? That's what I want you to focus on. Joy is such a powerful word. It's only three letters, but it is powerful because when our heart is singing, when we're doing things that we love, our vibration goes out into the universe. I'm a very spiritual person. And guess what? You get more of those joyful moments coming your way, the things that you're seeking. Powerful manifestations happen when our vibrational alignment is at a higher level. So we have a couple of gifts that we wanted to share. You may have seen behind me, there's actually a book on the shelf there. It's actually my best-selling book called Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. And it's designed for women to have 40 different words and word concepts to help them to ask for what they want and get it. And get it. Not by being aggressive, but by being assertive, by being clear, by tapping into the power of our language in a whole new way. And also how we align our energy so that we show up. We're not just talking, but we are actually embodying that feeling that we're giving. So there's actually a free chapter you can download on my website. If you go to yvonnesilva.com, there's a tab that says free gift. You can page down there and you can pick up chapter 8 of the Words, Women, and Wisdom book, A Modern Art of Confident Conversations. Bit of a mouthful. I think I need some water. And Venkat also has a gift for us as well, which I'm thrilled to hear. Do you want to explain about your gift as well, Venkat?
Yes, so my gift to you is a set of handcrafted equine coaching cards. On each card, you'll see a picture of one of my equine coaching partners because I conceive of horses as my equine colleagues. And then a very powerful coaching prompt. Just to give you an idea of a coaching prompt, one of the most powerful questions for me during my coaching training was the simple question, what would courage do? It was such an eye-opener for me. Now, whenever I feel hesitant, anxious, my smaller self, as we say in coaching, I remember that question, what would courage do? And I just know the answer. So, no hesitancy anymore. And if you'd like that set of coaching cards, please get in touch with me. You can reach me on LinkedIn, and then you can email me. And I'm super happy to send you those handcrafted equine coaching cards. And I hope they'll, put you on a great path for 2025.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Well, thank you so much for bringing that. And it's always worth staying to the end because there's always a valuable gift. Not that you haven't already had an hour's worth of valuable gifts. In a few minutes, there is actually a video that we're going to play at the end, which is when my book launched in 2018. There was a video I put together to help people to understand. Why did I even write this book? And what is contained within it? What will you take away if you pick up a copy of the book? So that'll run for the last few minutes of the show. Venkat, any last insights or learnings or things that you really want the audience to understand, particularly from that equine leadership perspective?
I think my message and the horse's message to you is you are enough. You're beautiful. You have it all. You don't lack anything. It's all in you. Just embrace it, go with it, and get into the flow.
Beautiful. You are enough. If every woman was looking in the mirror in the morning saying that as self-talk, you are enough, that alone is a powerful takeaway. One of the concepts in my book is the concept of being in process of. So if, for example, a lot of times women are saying, you know, I want to lose weight in the new year or become healthier. So instead of looking in the mirror and telling yourself, you know, I want to be 120 pounds, and your body and your brain is saying, oh, you're lying to yourself, use the term, I am in the process of becoming 120 pounds, and your body can own that. Your brain can own that because you might not be there yet, but you are in the process of. So sometimes, again, powerful words, one or two shake-ups, these words, these concepts that we're sharing today, super powerful. And yes, absolutely, you are enough. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your gifts and your wisdom with me today. I really appreciate you. And as we go forward into 2025, oh my gosh, it sounds so strange saying that. Yes, keep in touch, like the show, follow along. There will be more postings coming up in 2025 to have this regularly aired and updated on YouTube, and also to make sure that you follow Words, Women, and Wisdom, One Hour of Confident Conversations. There's more coming on that. And to keep in touch with Venkat and hear more about the equine leadership retreats that she offers as well. So thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Venkat, and
Thank
enjoy.
you so much, Yvonne. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Absolutely, it was. Enjoy the season and just remember, tap into that New Year's energy because it is super powerful and it comes once a year. So use that as your trigger instead of something negative. Thank you, everybody. Have a beautiful week and bye for now.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, The New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.